Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
Steve Stone, White Sox TV analyst.
And the pitcher, a 12-game winner already this year, Steve Stone.
Former American League Cy Young Award winner. Over four decades of excellence in the booth. No one breaks down baseball like Stoney.
Well, Lloyd doesn't have a stroke yet, but it only needs one at bat to come to him. Like that.
Oh, Eloy Jimenez! Welcome back! Hi, Mom! See you later, 5-3!
It's Eloy's night anyway, and you figured he was going to get good pitch to hit. He got a slider up, and I mean, he hit the daylights out of that.
Steve Stone with Mully and Haw on 670 The Score.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Always a joy to talk to Steve Stone, and all our guests appear on the Busey Bank Score Hotline, building business, growing wealth since 1868. Steve, good morning. How are you?
Well, I'm pretty good this morning, and you guys are calling me again. I thought this would be a much rosier week. It's got a little bit better during the time that we've talked last, but not quite where the Sox want to be.
Well, I think the rosiest story of all was yesterday seeing Liam Hendricks back on the bump. And just everything about that, the crowd, the way they reacted, the people that supported him, the video, his emotional reaction, his wife talking to the media, and just she was fantastic. It was hysterical. I think she called him a goofy, random man, which is, you know, that's as much an act of love as anything you're going to hear. that transcends the game, and it was a glorious and great moment.
Well, it was a great night to be at the ballpark. It was a great night to be associated with one of the really wonderful stories of this baseball season. Liam coming back as quickly as he came back. I don't know if anybody could have conceived that he would go through all the treatment he went through. I mean, as you know, chemo is very difficult, and the result is one of those things that you really can't predict. And Liam is back throwing baseballs in a major league game, averaging over 96 miles an hour. Her fastest pitch was over 96 miles an hour. So I was pretty happy with the fact that he got back as quickly as he did. I think people have to realize, however, that it's not going to be the Liam of old for a while yet. He's going to go through some difficult times on the mound. Last night was one of those nights where one pitch might have told the difference. It was a strike three that wasn't called, and then Theis came up with a base hit. So I think Liam will not be used in the closer role to start with until he gets his sea legs. And I think it's not going to be too long before he's back being the guy that was one of the dominant closers in baseball. But you're right, the story does transcend baseball because it's a story of life and death. It's a stage 4 non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. That's pretty serious stuff. And he promised, I mean, his goal was to be back before June 1st. And of the many goals that he's accomplished throughout this treatment, that was one of the goals he was able to reach.
Just remarkable. You're right. It was the highlight of the season, an inspiration to so many, Steve. And you related a conversation you had with Liam Hendricks' parents in Detroit. Just wondered if you could share that and what you took away from that conversation.
Well, number one, I was kind of surprised to be standing out front of the hotel, and I saw these two folks, walk up, and they said to me that they were Liam's parents. And we started talking. I told them that they had a really wonderful son, that they had a guy that was not only a great performer, but a really interesting personality. And then we talked about a little bit about the family background. And there was a lot of people in their family who had non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. Mm. And as we all know, if that's in your genetic blueprint, regardless of what it is, you're a product of your family history. And whatever it is your family has endured, you're probably in line, not guaranteeing you're going to get it, but your chances of getting it are pretty good. And they were mentioning three or four different people who had it in their family. And so it wasn't, in the grand scheme of things, surprising. But fortunately, he's an astonishingly strong guy. And he battled his way through, and we talked a little bit about them coming to Detroit. They were hoping they were able to see him being activated and pitch in Detroit. Didn't work out that way because he still had a sideline that he had to throw, and they couldn't have activated him then. So it worked out really well. But they were really nice people, really interesting people, and you know, it was about a 10-minute conversation. It was really a good one. And it showed, just looking at them and talking with them, it kind of showed a little bit how Liam got to be where he's been and got to be who he is, because he really has wonderful parents.
Yeah, I got to tell you, it is, there's part of me that wishes that you could put it in context of like a really great season, because it was – like such a special moment. It's by far the biggest moment, and you know, we know what it means. But they're just I wish that there was more of a hierarchy to the bullpen, a place for him to fit in more, because it seems like this season is slipping away quickly. And we heard Rick Hahn, and he took Memorial Day and he turned it into the 4th of July. And so it's almost like the division allows you to buy time. But, man, at some point, they're going to have to put together some wins. They're going to have to start winning on the road, winning in Kansas City, winning in Detroit. It's just a downer that they're in the position they're in.
Well, they richly deserve to be in the position they're in, because they played very right. poor baseball. They're 10-20 on the road. The team just hasn't gotten it together. But that's reality. I mean, that's what we have. That's what this team is dealing with. That doesn't mean it has to be that way going forward. But there's a few things that jump out at you. Number one is, and I listened to Rick yesterday. I heard a lot of things that he said. He understands exactly where the team is. And he says, you know, if we're in the same place right. on July 4th, we have to reevaluate. But before we get to July 4th, the reality is that they're playing some big boy teams in June. They're playing some teams that can really play. They've got the Angels. This is the entree to June. They've got the Angels now for three, as we know, losing the first game of the series. Detroit comes in for three, and that's a team the Sox lost 3 or 4 to in Detroit. Could have easily split, but didn't. Then they go to New York, and the Yankees and Aaron Judge specifically are starting to heat it up. Miami comes to town. They've got superlative pitching, and they're a tough team to beat. Then you go to Los Angeles and Seattle. The Dodgers, as we know, are always tough, and Seattle is starting to play really, really solid baseball. Julio Rodriguez is hitting everything in sight, and he's one of the best young players in the game. Then Texas comes to town, and Texas is dominating, for the moment, a very good Houston team. I mean, Texas has a run differential of 128. Then Boston comes to town. Then you go back to Anaheim, and you play the Angels for four games. That pretty much is the month of June. And so before you get to July 4th, this team's going to have a month of decision. They've got to start picking it up, because they're playing really strong baseball teams who look to crush lesser teams. I mean, look what they're doing to Oakland this year. Oakland is getting eviscerated by most ball clubs. They're sitting there at 11-45, and pretty much anybody that plays them, they figure they should sweep the series. Well, the Sox are one of those teams at this point that is not dominating many times some lesser competition, But now the lesser competition is off the schedule, and now you go after some really good teams. I look around the ball club, and I see pretty good talent at every position. I mean, I see guys who can hit, guys who can play defense, certainly guys who can pitch. I mean, you say you hope there's a slot in the bullpen. The bullpen has been magnificent. I mean, Santos has been great. Middleton has been great. Kelly's been great. Graveman has been great. That bullpen is solid right now. Liam's going to fit in when he can rightfully take his spot at the closer at the back end. But the problem has not been the bullpen. The bullpen hasn't given up much. The problem has been they have the highest chase rate in the major leagues right now. Yeah. I mean, you go back to that fourth game in Detroit, that game that was easily winnable, and now you're in the 10th inning. Okay, we could debate what happened in the 9th, but that's not the issue. You go to the 10th inning, and Alex Lang comes in the game, and he threw one strike in the inning. He went 1-2-3, a couple of strikeouts and a fly ball, and threw one strike. And that is what is characterized this ball club so far. The chase rate is in the neighborhood of 33%. I don't know what exactly, but it's up there. You can't keep swinging at pitches out of the zone consistently and expect to put together a lot of offense. And right now, this team is slightly behind Oakland offensively in batting average. I mean, it's just, it's a team now that's reassembled, which gives you hope. Eloy in the middle of this lineup is something that is very positive. I mean, we've seen Eloy starting to drive in runs. He's got a hitting streak going. It's up to, I believe it's up to 10 games. But this is a guy that can turn things around, can carry a ball club by himself, and the Sox are hoping that he can do that. He's also played a pretty decent right field in the two games he's played out there and says he's much more comfortable out there. But this is a team now that has talked and talked about the fact that they believe they're better. Now it's time to show all these teams in the major leagues that they are better, because this is a what have you done for me lately league. This is nobody's going to feel sorry for you. They're going to go out to beat your brains out on a daily basis. And it's time for the Sox to start to put it together, because if not, well, then you have to think about a lot of other alternatives, and I don't think the Sox want to do that just yet.
I agree with that. Steve, over the weekend, Ozzie Guillen created quite a stir by commenting on Lance Lynn's reaction, which was a negative, obvious reaction to Yoan Moncada misplaying a ground ball. And he called him out on the postgame show on NBC Sports Chicago. Just curious for what your reaction was to that. But more importantly, I'm curious what you think. Is that something that Pedro Grifol addresses behind closed doors? Do you think that bothered Pedro Grifol as much as it did some people watching?
Well, I have absolutely no reaction to that. And as far as how Pedro runs a team, I think Pedro does not leave anything sit. I think Pedro, and I've said this before on your show and other shows, I think Pedro's going to be a very good manager. And I think he's got a really good sense of what good baseball looks like. And, you know, you start to criticize physical errors, and that becomes a problem, because then when you give up a home run, then somebody criticizes you. Everybody wants to field every ball. Everybody wants to get a hit every time up. Everybody wants to make every good pitch when they have to make a good pitch. But the reality of this game is you're playing against the best players in the world. And this is a really tough game. This is not an easy game. If it was easy, everybody would be in the major leagues, and as we know, they're not. At any one given time, there's 26 players on 30 teams. You know, you're talking about in the neighborhood, you're talking about 780 players. These are the best players in the world, and they're trying to do the best they can on a daily basis, but they don't get it done sometimes. And so, you know, you can criticize the mental aspect, mental mistakes or things along those lines, guys not doing what they should be doing or preparing for a given play at a given time. But the physical errors, the giving up of base hits, the giving up of home runs, the walking leadoff hitters in an inning, these are things that nobody plans on doing. They just happen. If a pitcher could throw the ball everywhere they wanted to on every pitch, a guy that was batting 100 would lead baseball. They would lead the league. That isn't the case. Pitchers make mistakes. Hitters take advantage of it. Pitchers make bad pitches, and hitters get themselves out. Fielders want to field every ball. They miss some of them. They don't miss a lot of them, but they miss some of them.
But I don't mean you're reacting to Moncada misplaying the ball. That happens. My question is, what was your reaction to the reaction by Lance Lynn in showing up a teammate?
Oh, David, I know exactly what your question was, and my answer stands. I have no reaction.
What went wrong with Michael Kopech? I thought he had two of the best games I've seen from him, and I thought he was – they figured something out, and then you see what happens – yesterday, and it, you know, I didn't think he was – he just couldn't find the strike zone. It was crazy. And then the hitting Ohtani, then the home runs in the first inning, it just put him in a hole. And you know, it was extraordinary he actually lasted as long as he did, and he hit 100 pitches, whatever it was, 4 1/3.
Oh, yeah. I mean, look, it's unrealistic to assume that every time out, the last two times in 15 innings, he gave up 3 hits. That's not sustainable. Nobody's that good. But Michael is good enough to give you a good timeout every timeout. He just made some bad pitches in the first inning. Nobody's immune to that. So I still like Michael Kopech's stuff. He had a bad inning. Everybody has a bad inning. We've talked about that. But the fact was, after getting touched up for 4 1/1, he came back and he got that game into the fifth inning and didn't give up another run. So the bounce back was good. I mean, for 3 games, his ERA was under 1. It's not going to happen all that often. I mean, you know, this is still a guy, innings-wise, still a young pitcher in the game. And I think Michael is on the way to having a very good season. I mean, his stuff recently has been really good. And so, look, Mully, you can't believe that he's going to have that kind of dominance every time out. It doesn't work that way.
But it's fun to see, Steve. I mean, it was joyous.
Yeah. Well, what I loved to see was him competing against 2 guys in the middle of that lineup that have a chance to be 2 of the greatest players in our game, and that's Trout and Ohtani.
Right.
And, you know, you're going to face him back-to-back. That's pretty tough. One of the things that we saw last night in that game was the game wasn't turned around by that 4-run first inning. The game was actually won in a way that you'd never thought the game could be won. And the game was actually won on defense by Zach Neto at shortstop. He had a couple of plays that were absolutely phenomenal. And it shows you that you don't always have to win games by swinging the bat, hitting the ball out of the ballpark. The Sox hit 3 home runs. Unfortunately, there were no walks ahead of them, so they were solo shots. But Neto's play, and he made 2 of them, but the one that ended the ball game was just spectacular. It was like a quarterback looking for reads. He came up, made a stop that nobody thought he would make, looked at third base, and then had the presence of mind to realize that it was Grandal running, and threw to first base, got him by plenty. So his defense actually helped turn that game around, because if that ball gets through, this is a completely different game. I mean, the Sox then are knocking at the door. There's a lot of pressure in that inning. As it turned out, it didn't work out that way. And, David, sorry for calling you Michael, but I get a little excited about things every now and then. Nobody is really happy with what the Sox are doing right now, but finger-pointing and doing a whole lot of things like that, maybe not the greatest way to go about it.
No problem, Steve. So you just come back from Detroit, and the Tigers have Zach McKinstry having a pretty good year, and you know Cub fans – are noticing, because that's what fans of teams do. He shared with you what the difference is in his approach this year that might be making as much of an impact as anything. Could you share with us what he told you?
Well, look, one of the things that was important for him was that he's getting a chance to play every day. And even though it's different positions, his bat is in the lineup each and every day. He's a left-hand hitter, and he's a guy that has gotten his opportunity with Detroit. What he felt with the Cubs was that they wanted him to hit the ball out of the ballpark. You know, and you know that if you're capable of hitting the ball out of the ballpark, most teams want to do that. I remember, and you remember, the guy that went to the Hall of Fame, Ryan Sandberg. Jim Fry said to him, after he had won an MVP, he said, hey, look, you can hit a lot of home runs. You just have to change your stance and your style. And Rhino then became, you know, a fairly prolific home run hitter. McKinstry isn't that guy. McKinstry is one of those guys that can hit home runs, but he's one of those guys that is most effective when he uses the whole field. And so he felt much more comfortable coming to Detroit, and much more comfortable maybe because that is very close to where he went to college, very close to where he has a lot of friends and family, and they do come to games. They get a chance to see him play. He's getting his opportunity and making the most of it. He's a very valuable guy for that team right now, because A.J. Hinch can put him anywhere and put him in that lineup wherever he wants to, and he does a really good job. And leading off, he's been terrific for them. But I think we all saw how effective he can be, And, yeah, he's one of the main cogs on that Tiger team right now that's in second place. That team is only two games behind Minnesota. They're playing good, solid baseball. I don't think they have the starting pitching to hold up. But if Scoogle comes back and does what I think he can do with the, you know, a young lefty with a 98-mile-an-hour fastball, that team suddenly looks a whole lot better. So don't write off the Tigers just yet. That division for them is the same division it is for the Sox, who have played at times abysmally, but to find themselves just seven back, the Tigers are just two back. McKinstry's a big part of that right now.
Steve, Lucas Giolito back on the bump, and he has been very good this year, and yet his last time out was rough. I think he worked a season low 3 2/3, and he's been consistently getting six innings, and he's been very good. What do you expect to see from him tonight?
I expect a bounce back because his family is here. I saw his brother. I saw his mother after the game. His uncle is coming in. They're wonderful people. They're showbiz people.
Right.
His mother was in a lot of series years back. Lindsay Frost, it's really a great family. Getting to know them and seeing them when I go to Anaheim has been something that's really nice. I understand where Lucas gets it. Lucas is a very cerebral guy, and I expect a big bounce back. You know, he said the seven walks, he said, well, that's unacceptable, and it certainly is. I haven't seen him like that. I mean, he was missing up and out of the zone. He had no conception of where to throw that fastball. It was one of those days that you stand on the mound, and sometimes that plate looks like it's moving on you, and there's really not much you can do. He's able usually to make corrections during the course of the game, and he wasn't able to do it. Ethan Katz, who had him in high school, knows exactly what he's doing and not doing, and he went out there a couple of times and tried to get him back on track. Sometimes your body won't cooperate, but with his family here, I'm thinking, you know, he'll have a pretty good one tonight. This is still a pretty good Angel team who knows they really have their work cut out for them, despite the fact that they're 3 over .500. They're sitting there six games back of Texas, and also in a division where they've got Seattle right behind them a half game. That's a really tough division in the West. And the Angels are playing for a couple of different things, guys. That's why they'll be really tough in this series and really tough when we see them in Anaheim. They're playing to get into the playoffs. And they're playing thinking that if they get in the playoffs, maybe they can sign Ohtani. That is a big deal out there because he draws fans. He's the best player in the game. I mean, I've heard various people speculate on who's the best player in baseball. They say this guy's the best player, that guy's the best player. Look, the best player in baseball, hands down, is Ohtani because he's dominant as a pitcher. He's dominant as a hitter. He can steal bases. He hits the ball as far as just about anybody in the game. He is a unicorn. I mean, you didn't think a guy like that existed, but we're getting a chance to see him at the ballpark. And look, guys, you know, and you have a great listening audience. If you get a chance to see him, you don't know how many times you're going to get a chance to see him live, but it's like seeing Michael Jordan in his prime. You're watching Babe Ruth here, maybe a little bit better, only in that he pitches at the same time that he's hitting. You should come out the next couple of ball games and get a chance to see him because he's truly a special player.
Great stuff, Steve. Thanks a ton. Great catching up with you.
Thanks, Steve.
Okay, boys. Take care. Have a good rest of the show, and I'll talk to you in a week, and hopefully things will be a bit brighter.
That's a plan. Let's get that done.
Lindsay Frost is Lucas Giolito's mom, the actress.
Yeah.
Lindsay Frost.
Right.
She's been in a variety of different shows.
Yeah.
I think you've probably recognized her from, you know, she's been in everything.
How about this? I don't think you've seen this meme yet.
What
Let
is
me
it?
Show you that. That is like a very sad Bill Simmons after the Celtics lost. It's hysterical. You got to see it. We'll tweet it out, but it is really funny. He's just, the poor man is just gutted, and he has this look on his face, and it's become a meme. Everyone finds it hilarious, and I know I'm laughing about it, but
I'd say looks like a Sox fan.
Yeah. Looks like Mully. All right, great stuff. We got a lot of fun planned here. We got a few things we got to get to, and we're going to do that next.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof?
Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Leon Hall, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 at Score.
Well, number one, they play bad basketball. They're so undisciplined and unfundamentally sound. They win games strictly on talent. They don't even run an offense. That's what disappointed me the most. You know, you can win a lot of games on just talent. But when you against the zone, they just settle for jumpers. There's no ball body movement. Same thing I said at halftime. I mean, listen, you just come out. I don't even know what the final stats was. Yes, I do, actually.
9-42.
9-42.
21.4%.
Thank you, Chiquilla.
16-77 the last two games.
Yeah, that's not the way to win, and that's not going to get you to the NBA Finals, sadly. So a rough, rough performance from Boston when you needed it most. Now, Jason Tatum rolled an ankle early. That game.
The first play
of the game. Yeah. And he was struggling. You heard from Jaylen Brown saying that he felt like the team needed him to step up because of Tatum's injury and that he didn't do it and he was disappointed in himself.
He's not wrong.
Yeah.
He's not wrong about any of that. The right. descriptions, the analysis is all spot on if you're looking at what they needed to get from Tatum but couldn't because of the injury, what Brown couldn't provide, yada, 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 as they say. But at some point in time, when you are recognizing the fact that, you know what, you're not hitting the threes tonight. This isn't going to be that kind of a game. Nobody's getting hot. Nobody's getting open. You might want to change your approach. Coaches do that. Good coaches do that. Celtics don't have a good coach. They could not do that. And I don't want to be unfair as that sounds.
No, that's
but he's
rough.
A first-year head coach, and it showed in this series as much as anything that spelled the disparity between the two teams. It was a coaching mismatch that I think ultimately is the reason, one of the biggest reasons, why the Heat are moving on and the Celtics are staying home.
Well, I'm not going to argue with you, but I got to say that when I think we come out of that game and we think, boy, you know, the Boston Celtics blew it. My God, the Boston Celtics choked. They are a team that was such a higher seed than the play-in team they played. How could they possibly have lost to the Heat, especially after winning three in a row and getting Game 7 back in Boston, right?
Right.
Now, they lost, I think, three games in that series at home, talking about the Celtics. But again, you know, it's like talking about the Lakers after the Denver Nuggets beat them. What the Miami Heat have done is unbelievable. You know, Caleb Martin really should have been the MVP of that series. They gave it to Jimmy, and Jimmy is the inspiration of the
team.
He's
a respect
guy. He's the best player on the
team. You get that? He also was having a terrible game on Saturday.
Yes, he did.
But then in the final two minutes, he did rise to the occasion.
That's what he does.
You have to give Jimmy Butler the respect his play deserves. Like him or not, you have to respect him because of what he means to that team. That's why he got the award. But your point is well taken. Caleb Martin and Vincent, Max Strus, guys who were not drafted that have become integral parts of this Heat operation. Why does that happen? Because you have an organization that refuses to typecast guys. They work they work them into the mix and they trust them in high leverage moments and you get that in return. It's a great organization because of the mindset that starts at the top.
there were seven undrafted players that played in that game seven. That is unbelievable because, again, I think what's amazing, and you know, I keep saying this, you go back to the Knicks back in the day when they had guys like John Starks and Anthony Mason making huge contributions. There were just guys that fit the style of play that that Pat Riley wanted. Now, Riley's down in Miami, and Miami seems to want a certain type of player. And it doesn't matter how decorated the guy is or when you got him. They can find players that will break their hump, buy into their program, and that's what they do. They compete in practice the way they compete in games. And so you get into a game seven, and they're playing the same way that they always play.
It's not an adjustment.
It's not an adjustment.
They don't have to step up because they're already there.
They're already playing.
The intensity level is as high as it ever is.
It's you know, always. A lot of people complain about Tibbs and the way he plays guys and all that stuff. The Miami Heat, Jimmy Butler. Yeah. I mean, Jimmy Butler has taken this team to the NBA Finals.
Always be competing.
Always.
ABC. That's what they did. ABC. Always be competing. And you know what? I mean, the minutes police.
I know.
They don't ever, you know, they're not on duty in Miami because it's not necessarily something that is a factor there because they understand what's required. They get guys with something to prove, and then they give them the opportunity and the space to prove it. Jimmy Butler was in a shouting match. Wasn't that earlier this season?
That's right.
With
yes.
Eric Spoelstra.
That's exactly right.
It's not held against him. It's not even, you know, you don't carry that into the next day. Eric Spoelstra, to me, is now entering his sixth NBA finals in 15 years of head coaching.
Ridiculous.
I did not see this coming. I always thought unfairly that he was a product of the Big Three. He was just a guy that was a passenger with that team with LeBron and Wade and Bosh.
I mean, he might have been.
But he learned
but
from it.
But he's learned a ton from it.
He's learned a ton from it.
You know, he was D. Wade's trainer or something. He you know, you looked at him correctly, frankly. But now the guy has gotten better and better and better. And now he's got all of the – he's got the whole Pat Riley thing going. And
which makes him the perfect Heat coach.
It's incredible.
Give somebody an opportunity to prove themselves.
Yes.
They might feel a chip on their shoulder, and he goes out and he does it.
He's the undrafted head coach.
He is the undrafted head coach because his pedigree did not speak to what he was going to accomplish, and he accomplished it anyway. He's the perfect Heat head coach. They're the eighth seed. They were beaten by the Hawks in the first game.
Right.
They nearly lost to these Bulls. And here they are at the NBA Finals. It's interesting, Mully, as we sit here in a market where both baseball teams are in fourth place for the first time at the same time Memorial Day weekend since 2014. South Florida has the Florida Panthers and the Miami Heat in the respective finals.
That's ridiculous.
Unbelievably unfair.
That is ridiculous. What the hell is Florida doing in hockey?
Come
That's
on.
Insane. Yeah. It's just the whole thing's
Florida goofy. Man goes to finals.
Oh, that's beautiful. Yeah, I you know, I got to tell you, I think what I like about the Heat, and I believe Denver's going to win, and I kind of want to see Denver win, frankly. But what I like about the Heat is that, as we mentioned, all these undrafted players, if you said that to them, they would snap at you. Because it doesn't matter how a guy got there. It's how the guy plays and how he fits into what they do. And they've got a ton of guys like that. They've got so many guys like that, it's crazy. They keep finding these guys that fit the way they want to play.
That's scouting.
It's having a philosophy, a certain type of player you're looking for, and then being able to find them. Think about it. Like, they're not getting the top draft pick every year or anything like that. They have Jimmy come over. You know, one of the things they do is they weigh their players every day. So Jimmy goes in for his contract. He's got to get weighed because you got to
make sure. I
love
that story.
That's unbelievable.
I love that story because he understood what the expectations were, and he didn't bristle at that. Some guys might be offended by that.
Exactly.
But they knew that this was the organizational fit. There was a mesh there that you don't always get with either free agent player or player you trade for. You don't know until you're around them on a regular basis. But there's not a player in maybe pro sports that is any better of a fit to an organization than Jimmy Butler is to the Miami Heat. And it didn't work in Philly for whatever reason. Maybe they made a bad choice. It didn't work in Minnesota. Maybe they weren't ready for him at that point in time. And it certainly didn't work in Chicago for many of the same reasons. It's working in Miami because they have believed in him and all that he has to offer and taken him on because he epitomizes everything that they want out of their players, that kind of mental toughness.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. It really is. And, you know, as we talked about Caleb Martin, you know, I remember him and his brother playing for Nevada. I think they transferred from NC State, and they played against Loyola that year. That's when the shirtless man had the little girl. And
that was for Eric Musselman. Yeah. That was in the Elite Eight or Sweet 16 or one of those rounds.
Yes.
And they,
I think it was Elite Eight.
You worried about the Martin brothers.
And maybe it was the Sweet 16. You're right. I'd have to go look.
It was one of those Martin games where you remember because
both of them in the NBA.
Those guys look like future NBA players.
Yeah.
I think that's what we said at the time.
I think Cody plays for Charlotte, maybe. I don't know. But he's not as good as his brother, who can shoot better and certainly
And
does.
How about we've mentioned Max Strus because he's the local guy, made good.
Oh, that's
great. It's a tremendous story of perseverance, and the Bulls gave up on him and all those things. Duncan Robinson is another. Duncan Robinson is one of those guys that on Saturday night he had two open looks he didn't knock down, and it was pointed out. I think that whether it was Reggie Miller or Kenny Smith, they pointed out that he didn't make the shots that he needs to make.
Right.
He comes back, and this is a guy that has been clutch for them as well. And again, another one of those, where did he come from? Michigan. Where was he drafted? You know, it's like, how did they find these guys?
It's incredible. It's unbelievable. And like, again, if Jimmy could finish this thing, I think that he's Hall of Fame material. I'm just saying, for a guy, if he wins a title against the Joker and that team – after
that would solidify it.
That would.
That would definitely
solidify
it.
Because his story is like, he was what, the 30th or 31st, whatever it was?
You can't deny that. He was 30th, I think, by the Bulls. And he wasn't even the top player that in that draft. Wasn't Taj Gibson taken ahead of him that year?
Good God.
Were they in the same draft class? And Jimmy Butler paid his dues.
Starts out as a defender, starts out as a guy that's just sort of an add-on. Eventually, you know, is battling to be the star of the team, leaves, and, you know, things don't go great in Minnesota, and then he leaves again. He ends up in Philadelphia, and they choose a different player over him, which is hysterical hearing him talk about it. And then, obviously, he ends up in Miami, in part because D. Wade played with him in Chicago and is recommending him to them as their type of player. Very, very amazing that he's become this, you know, playoff Jimmy after all the rest of it.
Playoff Jimmy. It's not a myth.
No.
It's a reality, and it's taken them all the way to the NBA Finals, which start Wednesday night.
Again, with all these undrafted guys as
Thursday
a play-in
night.
Team.
Thursday night. I'm sorry. I did the calendar mistake again. Okay. It's not Monday, people. It's Tuesday.
Tuesday.
Stop yelling at me.
Yes. Remember, it's Tuesday.
It's Tuesday.
Okay.
It's one day closer to NASCAR.
It's a Layla Tuesday. We got, you know what? You snuck that in on me.
I know I did.
That is.
We'll talk about this tomorrow.
But we have to. You know what? Can we talk to someone about NASCAR?
We're going to. We got to do that.
We just got to ask, why the hell do you want to be here and how much are you paying for it? And are you going to damage every building in downtown Chicago? And my God, the traffic. Other than that, everything's going
to
be
Says
great.
The people who get to work before 5 a.m. where there is no traffic.
Nonetheless.
Okay.
Somebody's facing traffic.
Just keep it real.
4th of July. Okay. Yeah. All right. We've got Layla Tuesday. She's in with Dan. We'll talk to them next. It's Mully and Haw on the Score.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.